Hey, Miranda, how are you?
I'm pretty good. How are you? I'm super excited.
Yeah, nice to be back on Les Bookworms Pod. Our last episode was French, where we talked to your friend Brigitte, so it's nice to be back with a book for the first time in 2022.
Yes, this is our first book of 2022, which it feels like we slept through the last 2 years, and but for this podcast, I don't know what I would have had to show for the last 2 years. So, really excited for 2022 to be better than 2021. Although, in terms of this podcast, that's a tall order, because I feel like we had a really great year last year, but there's always more, and
I loved the books, yeah.
Yeah, like...
the books were great. It's going to be hard to top. We did some pretty awesome ones. But today's is also very exciting. We're going to be talking about a graphic novel, or bande dessinée, which I think has been on our radar for literally a year and a half now. We've been trying to get to this, and we finally did it.
Yeah, this specific BD was so much fun to read. It's really accessible. I read it in basically a day. It doesn't take more than a few hours, and there's so much
in
it.
It's absolutely beautiful.
Yes.
The illustration. Oh my gosh. Gorgeous. Gorgeous, gorgeous. Because we already touched on the genre of bande dessinée when we talked about Banana Girl, but these are two very different types. Today we're talking about Le Piano Oriental, or the Oriental Piano, and it has much more of a narrative, I felt like, than Banana Girl. There's a lot more text involved, and even the way she weaves her illustrations, I felt like were more of a connected story than kind of chapters or page by page that we had in the Banana Girl example.
Right.
What about you?
Yeah, no, I totally agree. So it's written by Zeyna Abredehed. I don't know how to pronounce her last name. I'm so sorry. But she's a Lebanese-French cartoonist, and she's published several graphic novels, I think.
Mm-hmm.
But
even one with Leila Slimani, one of our...
Oh, I did not know that.
You know, OG authors. Yes, they did one together. So that was very
That's cool. Well, Helen, what are you drinking today?
I have a nice lavender chamomile tea.
Oh,
what about
you? How calming. That sounds lovely. I have a very ridiculous drink. It's a maple tea that I've sweetened with maple syrup and poured over ice. And it's delicious and very mapley.
Very Canadian of you.
We bought some maple syrup for pancakes, and I realized that I love maple syrup and put it in everything. So, yeah. Another.
There you go. Nice. Well, I gotta stay warm. It's what, negative 20 at the moment?
Yes, it is like negative 25 with the wind chill. It's more like negative 30. So, yeah, it's
that's
real
cold.
It's really cold. But on the bright side, the Rideau Canal is frozen, so we can skate on it, which usually doesn't happen this early in the year. So that's quite nice. So this, Le Piano Oriental tells the story of her grandfather and his creation of sort of a new way of using the piano, and to tell his experience. And it's really beautiful because it talks about language and culture in the same way that Banana Girl does, I think, but in obviously a different country and different context. Lebanon was occupied by France or under French control for a period of time, and so it talks about that difference of not just a new identity, but like it is, you know, there's a part where they say like both Arabic and French are my langue maternelle, my like mother tongue. So I think that part of it is really cool because it just weaves in all of these similar themes that we talk about. We end up talking about most of the time. It's like stuff that really interests us. So I thought it was really cool.
No, absolutely. I agree. So this first came on my radar because of Les Livres sur la Place, which is a literary festival in Nancy every year where authors come and they sell their books. And she actually came with Leila Slimani and they did a joint discussion. And they were talking about many different books, the book that they did together. But this one stuck out to me. And I was so upset because in line, the person in front of me bought the last copy, so I couldn't get it. And she was doing like beautiful illustrations in them. And I was just so upset. Oh, it broke my heart. So then I kept going back to the bookstores and like looking for it. They didn't have it. And I finally found one. And I was like, I have to send this to Miranda. So that was the only one in the bookstore. I got it from the library. Go libraries. but I'm so happy to have read it. I just remember how eloquently she spoke, because it brought to life the book for me when I read it, because I had her words in the back of my mind, which we'll have slightly different experiences, yeah. I'm sure, because I didn't share any of this with you, as just so that we would have different reading experiences to talk about. But yeah, I loved her discussion of identity, because that is something we turn to often in this podcast, yeah. is how our identity makes us who we are, but also how fluid it is and how much it can change depending on the context and the environment we find ourselves in.
I think before we dive in, I just want to say this was a beautiful gift to receive. It is a stunning book. Like, it is actually, the book itself is gorgeous. It's really thick. It almost looks like a cookbook. And the pages are like really thick and so satisfying to like go through.
And there's some that double open.
Yes.
Oh, that's one of my favorite pages.
Yes. And yeah. the illustrations are so unique and really beautiful. And the whole book is black and white. That sort of plays into narrative as well. And I loved that. I loved the continuity of all of it. You know, I will say that I found it a little bit difficult to follow the timeline sometimes. It goes sort of back and forth between her moving to Paris and her identity and her grandfather's. So sometimes it was just like I got lost in the family tree a little bit. But it was a beautiful novel. So, okay, with that caveat of like, I know ebooks are better for the environment. I get it. I totally understand that people don't want to have 200 books, and I'm moving apartments and packing up all of our books is literally half of the boxes so far. So like, I get it. But this one, I think, is the one. If you're going to buy a book, this is the one to buy. It's like beautiful.
So worth it. It is. It's gorgeous. Oh, I can understand maybe where some of the confusion comes from with the double narrative, but I also thought that was so beautiful in a sense, because for me, the heart of this book is this piano. So this invention that her grandfather comes up with for the piano to play both Oriental music and Occidental music. And basically what that means is there are different notes and there's different cadences, and an Occidental piano, or what we would consider just your standard piano, doesn't have the capability of playing Oriental music.
Yeah.
And so how her grandfather was able to make a device by changing what the pedals on the bottom do to shift and add capabilities and more notes to this piano was awesome. And then for me, that became also symbolism of, throughout the book, time and time again, we see with her father, we see with her, their stories and how they switch on that pedal, and all of a sudden,
yes,
things open up. So for me, it was so beautiful when she's talking about moving to Paris, of how she would put her foot on and off the pedal and Arabic words would come out, or French words would come out. And it was that mix of being in both places at once and having to, I guess, code switch for her of identity, of who she was and what she was saying. I don't know. I just thought that was a beautiful thing throughout the book, of the importance of words and how she would knit them together. That was one of the best pages, I thought, was the page where she knitted all of these words in letters together. And it was a beautiful representation of sometimes how your brain is overloaded on language and culture and who you are and where it's coming from and how you get it out and make these beautiful sounds that we call language and communicate with others.
Yeah, and I think that there's also an element of it that the thing I loved is how authentic that was, again, because of the history that Lebanon has with French presence, shall we say. Like, that it is such an authentic way to be traveling this world, is because your family is mostly speaking Arabic, but of course you're learning a lot of French, so of course those words sort of just become intertwined. And I think that we have that experience sometimes as well, where it is authentic to my experience to say, ugh, I have so much swaff, right? Like, it's a stupid stupid thing, but it is like I'm thinking mostly in English, but if I'm surrounded by French, that's the word that comes most easily to my mind. And sometimes you just pick the words that fit better. So it's like, it's not even the, I like the way she sort of explained it as not being a decision necessarily, but just part of who you were and how you grew up. Yes, it's parts she had to sort of code switch and had to like push on that pedal, but there was also just an authentic, like genuine weaving together of these two languages and cultures.
One thing that stuck out to me from her talk was that she says that she writes in French but draws in Arabic.
Oh!
And that was such an interesting perspective to think about, and how that comes across in this bidet.
Yeah.
Now that I say that, can you see that? Can you see how things are slightly different? Or
I mean, I definitely feel like the illustrations were nothing like I'd ever seen. Like, they're definitely not. And I don't mean to say that as like, oh, they're so, you know, strange. They're beautiful and totally understandable, but just the way, like the style.
I felt it was so fluid.
Yeah.
The way her ink brush, like there was not really straight lines.
It was also very, like, I get what you're saying. There was lots of movement. There's a great thing where she's translating between Arabic and French, and she's made mistakes. Or no, it's her, this is her grandfather who's made mistakes. And his father and his grandfather are like, oh, une erreur, un autre erreur. Like, there are so many errors here. And their ties sort of like tap on his shoulder, and it's that adorable way of like when you're a kid being like, oh, this suffocating level of like a disappointment. I'm like, oh, and another thing, oh my gosh, there's another mistake. And it was such a great like comical way of showing it. But I think you're right, like there's a lot of fluidity, a lot of movement in the illustrations themselves. I felt like one of the parts that just me personally I understood very well is the packing one bag that can only weigh so much and traveling over.
Yes, I know this very well.
It's so, like, it's just, it's the way of the airlines today and always, it seems, of just that, like, he asks himself, you know, would I need this on a desert island, right? Because there's only so much that can go into this suitcase. I just love that.
It's the story of my life. I mean, I did this coming back from my holidays. It goes beyond just books or shirts. My thing at the moment that's so hard is the family ties, right? So thinking about objects like this oriental piano or her grandfather's piano, you can't bring it. And there's so many things, and that's such a heartbreaking part of being an immigrant, is the almost severing of physical reminders of legacy, you know, of the realization that I won't be able to have some of these possessions that have been in my family, or unless I, you know, put it on a boat and, you know, cross the Atlantic Ocean, which is going to cost way too much. But
yeah,
there is that sad realization of letting China is probably just never going to make it on a flight. Like, it's just not going to be a thing. So appreciation for that, and also the sadness of ties that get cut or legacies that stop. There's always trade-offs, no matter which way you look.
Yeah. Well, and I think it's picking things that will act in as a link to those things without actually being the things themselves. Like, I know that I brought little Canadian things with me, just it wasn't going to make any sense for me to have a Leafs jersey in France, but I also like love hockey, and it was one way that I could keep that with me, even if I wasn't going to be able to watch any of the games or talk to anybody or have anything in common. It was one way to keep a hold of that thing I was leaving behind. So I think that's also part of it, is like, how much do you choose, you know, pictures of family? Yes, but like, you have to sort of balance between, you know, what do I need, like, day to day, and how can I allow to be sentimental for this portion of my luggage?
Like, okay, here's another question for you. She pointed out in her talk that there are such subtle connotations in how you feel with your home country or your country of origin and your current home country, or, you know, where you're choosing to live, those relationships change. And I thought this was so beautiful, because she pointed out between the two French words rentrer and revenir.
Mm. Yes.
What is the difference? And it blew my mind. I just remember sitting there going, oh my goodness, there are subtle connotations that are different, right? There, rentrer is not the same as revenir. And then so one means going home and one means returning. Right. Yeah. And so then she says, at what point was I no longer going home? I was returning. And at what point does that change? And for me,
that's such a great point.
You know, when I listened to this a year and a half ago, I think my answer is different than what it is now. And I definitely have an experience. You know, I haven't
seen more.
Yeah. Well, I hadn't seen my family in 2 years because of COVID. And the longer you stay away, I'm going on year 4 of being in Europe. You just start to slowly realize how much life changes, how you've changed. And it can be the smallest things. Like, it doesn't mean I'm completely out of touch with the American way of life, or that if, you know, I stayed longer, I couldn't slip back in. But there's like stutter steps, or the stutter steps in the way you act and the way you speak, or what you find normal and not normal. Like, there's so many times I was just like, is this normal? This is so weird. Like, I don't remember it being like this. And that sitting on the plane, if someone next to you says, you know, are you going home? What do you say? Because in some ways, yes, and in some ways, no. Like, my home is now France, but my home will always be the U.S. You know, it blew my mind. And her posing that question and kind of tying it to this book of, you know, we see that development in her character. Because she herself is a secondary character throughout. She's telling her grandfather's story, but we get glimpses of her journey of becoming an immigrant, of finding herself. And that was such an interesting aspect, I thought, of the sense of when do you stop going home and, like, when are you just returning?
Yeah, I remember that so clearly when she talks about her, because she left for Paris in 2004. But she talks about the times that her grandfather would go back and forth between Lebanon and France, and then her going back and forth, and how, that difference of rentrer, revenir. And I think that there's an element of that no matter, like, anytime you move anywhere, to be honest, like, even on a local level, I find that when people would, you know, my parents moved to a different city than Toronto after I graduated high school. And so even when I say I'm going to visit my parents, people say, oh, you're going home. And it's such a weird thing, because it doesn't feel like home to me. But at the same time, you know, family and your parents are where you go home to in on some level, right? So, yeah, I mean, that element of it, I struggle with even within Canada.
Like, my personal life, where I'm going, who knows? But I know, at least with Zaina, like, she did become a French citizen. And so, you know, is it when you've lived abroad longer than you've lived in your country? Or is it, you know, when you're speaking more of one language than the other? There's just always those questions of how we evolve and who we become. Like, to make another reference, Paul Taylor is one of my favorite comedians. He performs in French and English. You can look him up. But his new comedy show is based on this idea of he's lived outside of England longer than he lived in it. His mom's Irish. His family speaks French. He speaks French without an accent. But yet, for him, he's still British. But he can't tell you why. Because every time he goes home, they're like, you're not British. And it's that feeling of like, I don't know. And it's funny. It can be very comedic when told in a good way. But it's also, like, heartbreaking. Because, you know, when do you change? And I don't think I will ever shed the fact that I'm American. I think that will always be noticeable. And yet at the same time, there will come a point where I'm also horribly out of touch and have no idea about certain things.
I mean, I think that this is the thing that Banana Girl touched on far more than the Oriental Piano did. But it still had a moment of this, of saying, you know, there was a moment where people say, oh, you're... They click on, like, they sort of key into some part of the identity of being from Lebanon, and then they in the animation, they sort of show her on the other side being a very stereotypical version of whatever that is, you know. So oh, you're Arab, and then they show someone, you know, sort of like very, you know, religiously dressed or sort of styled, and then And it's that element of, like, it's not just how you feel about
it's how people perceive
what your identity is. It's how people perceive you. Because I think mm-hmm. part of the reason you'll always feel connected to America is because even if your accent becomes totally perfect and you dress and you already dress very French. But I think that, like, people won't forget that you're American and they remind you that you're the American. So it's like, mm-hmm. how can you ever fully let go of that identity when you're reminded of it?
And then do you want to? That's the other thing. You know, the whole story yeah. of the piano, it's the blending of music, the blending of culture, the right. blending of identity, the ability to go back and forth. Do we want to cut it off? And I don't think that's the answer.
Yeah, I agree. It's like he didn't bring a piano from Lebanon and was like, here, try this. He wanted to pull them together, right? Like he, so mm-hmm. yeah, I agree. I just find that Banana Girl, at least in contrast, spoke a lot more about the, like, let's be honest, the, like, racism and the xenophobia, mm-hmm. I think, is more the word of, like, you are not from here for whatever reason, yeah. and that there's always some element of that. Like, I talk about this a lot with my friends because my mother was American and never got her Canadian citizenship, and a lot of my friends, you know, joke about the fact that their parents have been in Canada longer than my mom was in Canada. They're Canadian citizens, and yet I'm never questioned on my Canadian level, like level of Canadianness or Canadian identity. And they are because of, you know, their parents are from Nigeria or Pakistan. So I think that there is a xenophobia of, like, you're not from here. And yeah. so I don't find that the book spent a lot of time on that, but there were comedic ways that she explained, you know, people assuming things about you. Oh, like, you're from, you know, Lebanon. I love the meze and the platters. And then they imagine her as being a great cook, you know, with, like, all these senses. And,
yeah,
you know, it's just this sort of trying to make any person into one single identity is impossible, right?
And a caricature of that culture. Absolutely. Yeah, she, to bring her up once again. Sorry, it was a great talk. If you ever have an opportunity to see her speak, do it. She's eloquent and it, like I said, it completely changed how I read the book because I was looking, to be fair, incredibly biased, but it helped. I loved it because she did. She talked about, you know, before she had her French ID cards, like, that said, you know, French citizen, you know, just like I do, it says that you're, like, a foreigner. Mm-hmm. You have to use that as an ID. And so people at the post office or wherever she was would be like, oh, I thought I heard a little right. accent, and, like, the French are so good at that. They're like, oh, tu as un petit accent? Like, you're like, oh, you know, like, thank you. As you already said, French was her second mother tongue. Like, she doesn't have a strong right. accent. Like, it's a native language for her. It's not at all the same as me who learned at 15. And then she said at the moment that she became a citizen and she could hand her French card that said it's a citizen, no one ever asked about her accent. And so, like, it's that thing, again, of the perception someone has when they're handed a card that identifies someone as a foreigner. They made up an yeah. accent because they never brought it up ever again. And you're just like, oh, isn't that a shame?
Yeah.
It says a lot about how people perceive her because of that small
yeah,
change.
Yeah, no, that's a great point. And I think that, like, it gives people the opportunity to mention something or to try and see a difference that maybe that they wouldn't have noticed otherwise. Like, I think language is really unique in that way. Accents are still a way that people can say, oh, what's that? Where's that from? And sometimes it's genuine curiosity and sometimes it's like, that's different. What is that? It's mm-hmm. interesting for her to, like, to have her say that that was the connection, that, like, it was because she was a foreigner that they felt comfortable to ask about the accent. Because even if they did hear something afterwards, seeing that she's French was like, oh, okay, so it's not worth asking about, almost, which That's is cool. interesting.
Yeah.
You know?
That is a subtle difference. Absolutely. It could be. Who knows? I mean, we'll never know. The post office is not the nicest place in the world. So.
There is one thing, though, that I loved in the illustrations, but I guess sort of both. There were little, like, sound bubbles of just the different sounds that were in the everyday life. So, like, the sound her grandfather's shoes made on the cobblestone and different things. And it gave you this musicality to the book that I loved, mm-hmm. where like just little like click clacks and they had a parrot or like a budgie or something that would say little like chichi or kiki and they would you would have all this like sort of background sound. It just definitely just gave you this mm-hmm. feeling of like musicality and like just I don't know I really liked that just in small ways, all of the different things that make noises that totally came through that he was like a musician. It felt like I was living through his eyes and in that way.
I felt the whole time I was reading the book, because I read it in one sitting. Like you said, it's not a 30-minute read, you know, it was probably an hour and a half, 2 hours where I just sat and was absorbed. This book brings you in. I was completely absorbed in this story, in this other world, because the pictures, like you said, you can almost hear things as you're reading it. Like I can't express how great this graphic novel is. It's really fantastic because there's so many layers yeah. to it. You can just read it as a great book where you escape the world for 2 hours, but you can also dive into all of these little aspects. Yeah. Little is almost demeaning, but she's not making big, giant discussions. It's there for those who want to see it.
Yeah.
Is what I'm trying to say.
Yeah, no, I exactly. I think that it's little yeah. things that you're like, oh, that was just a small moment, and it gave so much to the story, and it gave so much to the, like, the pacing or the, just the sort of feeling of the book. And yeah, so I totally agree. It's the little things, they're not little, but they throughout the book just give it a very unique rhythm, for lack of a better word. Like it's a really cool mm-hmm. book, and I don't think I've ever read anything very similar, so I really enjoyed it.
Yeah, no, hands down, if you can find it, get a copy, it's really worth it.
Yeah, for sure.
Well, this has been a wonderful discussion, and I'm looking forward to a bunch of amazing books. We got another country on our list. Lebanon was introduced to the Francophonie, so very exciting to start off the year with a new country, and can't wait for some more great books. If you have suggestions for us, feel free to hit us up on our Instagram at lesbookwormspod or our email or blog. We would love any suggestions of books that we should check out for another episode.
Yes, absolutely. We're always looking to find that gem that you found. This feels like a gem to me. Like it's an incredible BD. Mm-hmm. I swear we are not being supported to say this, but I just honestly it's a great book, and it is not an ad, but it's just a really good book, and I've really enjoyed it. So if you can find any other gems like this, we'd love to hear from you guys. I mean, this is the best thing about the Francophone community, is how diverse and widespread it is. So let's like take advantage of that. Yes, exactly. Just want more reasons why I need to come back. It's going to happen this year. So this is a great way to start off 2022. Thank you for finding this gem and sending it to me, Helen.
You are awesome. Welcome. I've got to share good books with other bookworms. We will catch you next time. A bientôt.
A bientôt.